people watching this may or may not know, but in the UAE, the loan to value rules only came in, I think, about 2014, 15. Before that, you could have whatever the bank, decided that you could have in terms of your deposit.
Hello, team, and welcome back to another podcast of the Two Fat Brokers. I'm Barney from Dubai.
Ben from Abu Dhabi.
And today we are graced with the myth, the legend, the Christmas fairy.
Judy mother, from Oxford.
Judy Crompton. Hello, mum.
Hello, darling.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Slightly hungover, but other than that, tickety-boo.
It is Christmas, after all. Full exactly. of the Christmas cheer.
Exactly.
So today we are going to talk about how our mother created a property empire using leverage. Isn't that right, bro?
Yeah, we've spoken about you a few times on this podcast. And even if you go back into the mists of time, there's an article in The National about us and us talking about you being one of our influences in terms of getting into real estate. As that's, what we grew up with you building your empire. So I think it'd be a nice thing for us to do. There's lots of people out there who are looking to build a property portfolio, don't know how to do it, don't know where to start. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your journey. How did you start?
Well, the way I started was over 30 years ago, and had left Portugal with a small wedge of money and suddenly realized
a Scudos?
It was
before the Euro.
It was a Scudos, yeah. And suddenly realized, help, you haven't got a pension. And then I was 50, and I thought, this is not good.
30 years ago, you were 50? Must mean you're, how old now?
80.
83.
A woman never tells her age, mother.
I always do.
Or a lady.
Do.
Well, that's what we like about the Two Fat Brokers. Everything's laid bare. The truth is
exactly.
out.
There is nothing to hide here. So there I was with no pension. Took myself round to several financial institutions, and at the end of the first day, thought, actually, I think if I smiled too widely, they'd have the fillings out of my back teeth. I'm not going to give them my money. I'm going to do something else. And so I found a property only a few streets away and thought, I could rent that. Because I knew a lot of students who were paying a great deal of money for very poor quality properties.
So, and at this time, you were studying, right?
I was doing a degree in midwifery in my 50s, which
that's how she knew a load
odd.
Of students. It wasn't anything nefarious. It wasn't hanging around schools.
Nothing nefarious. They were all girl students as well. And so I went and knocked on the door and said, excuse me, I see you've got a for sale sign up. I'd like to buy your house. Would you like to look at it first? I said, no, it's in the right place, it's the right size, and it's near bus stops, and it has everything that I need, and anything that's wrong with it, I can put right. So I bought my first property there and then.
Well, what made you think that property was a good investment? Obviously, you had this nest egg. You'd spoken to the financial advisors. You didn't trust them. What then made you think, okay, property is the way to go?
Because I knew what the going rate for rent on these properties was. And I also had a fair idea of what the mortgage would cost. And I had, most of the money for the house. It would need a small mortgage. And I knew that I could earn more than
you had enough escudos.
And enough escudos.
Just for the point of reference, escudos were the currency of Portugal before they joined the euro. There's people who watch
everyone
this who
will know
never
that.
Knew the world before the euro. We're very popular with the youth.
Yes. So I bought my first property. And then do you want to know what happened next?
Yes.
Can you remember like what your yield was on that property?
And what your, 30 years ago. Your loan to value was.
Did you think about that kind of thing? Or not really?
The mortgages then were 15%.
Wow.
15%. So I couldn't have done it if I hadn't got...
Labour government, obviously.
I can't remember. 30-odd years ago.
Major.
Look it up, somebody.
Major?
Would have been no, 90, just after Thatcher.
Was,
Thatcher
yeah,
resigned
Thatcher.
In 89.
Yeah, absolutely. So that went well. I put it in the hands of an agency because I didn't know what the paperwork was expected, what paperwork was expected. I didn't really know how to manage it. So I thought, well, I'll pay somebody else to manage it and then I'll watch them extremely closely. So I did. And after the first year, the value of the property had gone up. So I started that amazing thing called leverage.
So you rented the house out not to a family. Mm-mm. You rented out as what we would call like a house in multiple occupations. So you'd rent each room out to
HMO,
an individual.
But there weren't HMOs then. The concept of HMOs came in a few years later.
So in Dubai, and I'm sure Abu Dhabi, it's called flat sharing. So you have multiple people who are not related living together, and they each have their own room and they share the communal spaces.
Which used to be a problem in the UAE until a couple of years ago, where it's now legal for people who are unrelated and of different genders to share. Whereas I think before that wasn't legal.
Correct.
Well, you didn't find it that much of a problem, did you?
You're breaking the law.
I never did anything like that. We were all related and of the same sex. I tell you, mother.
There we go.
So why did you do that? Why did you rent it to individuals rather than a family?
Better income, better income. The returns were going to be quite a lot greater.
It must have been to service a 15% mortgage.
Yeah, but it was quite a small mortgage. It was a very small mortgage. That was the only way I could have started.
So you had quite a lot of equity in the house straight away.
I did. But, you know, it was so ridiculous. Property then, by comparison, was so ridiculously cheap.
How much was it, your first house?
My first house was, I think it was about £70,000. But when I was building my portfolio, I bought a 3-bedroom property for £49,000. And it was in good nick.
Point of reference, £79,000 is about
300,000 dirhams?
300,000, no, because then it was 7-1, so 150,000 dirhams for a house in Oxford.
In Oxford, one of the most expensive places. Well,
then half a million then if it was 7-1. Mm.
Can't
seven
do
times
that.
Seven is 49.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Well, whatever. So.
Not very many dirhams.
No, not very many. Not even very many pounds by present day comparison. So there I was. Suddenly, property started to go up in value. And it occurred to me that, actually, I've got enough for a deposit on another house. And so I drew down the
not a
Scudos
anymore, you drew,
no,
you
we're
drew
back
it down.
In pounds now, drawing down pounds.
Drawing down is borrowing money against the value of your house, the equity that you have in your house.
Exactly. Thanks.
Which you can do in the UAE, but only to purchase another property.
Correct.
Which is kind of interesting. You can only draw money down from your current house to purchase
it's
another
the same
house.
In the UK now.
You can't
you can do it
to
renovations,
improve your
right?
Improve, yeah.
Yeah, not improve in the UAE, I don't think.
Really?
It's only to
not
purchase
know,
another property.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Which is odd. Like, what, and then you're just increasing your leverage. But anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, so I bought another property. And then now I had two properties, both going up in value. And I think my best story about buying properties was that I realized by then I had about 5 or 6 properties and they had all gone up in value and I had X amount of money. And
interest rates had come down.
Yep, absolutely. And so I made an appointment with a very young guy from one of the estate agents to show me around some properties in Oxford, very close to each other, one Saturday morning. And at the end of the Saturday morning, he said, "So, Mrs. Crompton, what do you think?" And I said, "About what?" And he said, "Well, do you think that you'd like either of those properties?" And I said,
it's a great closing question, by the way.
I can't decide. I said, let me just think about it for a minute. And I stood and I watched as he got more and more and more anxious. And then I said, no, sorry. And his face fell. He was very young. Then I said, I think I'll take them both. And his his eyes nearly dropped out of his head. And he said, you mean you want to take two properties in one morning? I said, yeah, I think I will. They both fulfill my needs. Yeah, why don't we do that? Yes, certainly.
See, even our mother fucks with real estate agents.
Yes, exactly.
Could probably bleep that out, huh?
It was such fun. It was, I just think he probably still in his 40s or 50s now dines out on that story, the day I sold two properties.
And so where did you max out in terms of number of properties that you owned?
I can't remember the exact number, but it was about 20, but it wasn't the day job. And it was becoming exceedingly tiring. So I then made a decision.
By this point, you were managing them all yourself?
I was, yes.
As well as studying to be a midwife? Or you must have graduated.
Yes, I'd graduated. And I was then studying to be a psychotherapist. And I had clients. And so I decided that I would play things a different way, that I would sell most of the properties, which was a big decision because capital gains tax was very high.
Capital gains tax is any of the profit that you made when you owned a property, the government in the UK will take a percentage share of.
A big percentage share, 40%? Something like 40%, yeah. Yes.
So before we get to you selling them, if you don't mind, we'll take a step back. So what was it that you were looking for in these in these properties when you were going around and you saw these properties? What was it that you were looking for?
The ones I decided to buy, you mean? Yeah, okay. I was looking for the ability to rent out four rooms and have a fair amount of living space.
So they were all four, you went for a four-bedroom house?
They were all four bedrooms. They started off as three, but in those days there were a lot of houses that had a very, very big ground floor or had once upon a time been a front sitting room and a dining room and a kitchen, and someone had knocked the wall down. I put the walls back so that I always had four tenants at least in a property, which then generated enough income for me to service a mortgage and keep the property in good order. But as well as having enough space, it had to be in the right location because then students weren't allowed to have cars weren't allowed to bring cars into Oxford. It's changed now. But a lot of my tenants also were young professionals who didn't have cars either, so they needed to be near public transport. So they were all near bus stops or near the station. Okay. And
so well located for the type of tenant that you were, yes, you were targeting.
And a very small garden because tenants do not do gardening.
That's fair. And then you also mentioned that, you use leverage.
Yes.
In terms of, in growing your portfolio, how did you use leverage and what does that mean to you, that word?
Well, it means using the value of the properties that I had and keeping a constant check on the increasing value of properties in Oxford. And it would reach a point where my properties had gone up a sufficient amount of money to allow me to borrow against that property to put down as a deposit on the next property. So I built.
What was the sweet spot? How much do you think it had to have gone up by? Or was it just the money left over in the mortgage payments, right?
No, and the increase in the value of the properties as well.
But it's a balancing act, right? Because you've got to have enough income from the property to wear the additional borrowing value.
Yes.
Can you remember where the sweet spot was?
I can't. I'm so sorry.
It was a long time ago.
Everything was a long time ago.
But so as an example, let's say you went for a 50-50 mortgage and you bought like somewhere worth £60,000. So you put £30,000 in there, and then the value in that property would then increase to, let's say, 90. So then you could then take that, that 30 out and put it into another house, worth
that 60 is exactly right, Ben. You've described it perfectly.
House prices must have been going up so fast because you did all of this in the 10-year period?
Less. Yes, less than that.
So house prices must have been going crazy.
But that wasn't the sole reason that I could do it. Was also that you only had to have a very small deposit. It was not the way things are arranged here. You didn't have to have a huge chunk of money to put down. 5-10%. Yeah, and sometimes you could get 100% mortgage. I would never do that because it looked to me an extremely dangerous way to run a portfolio. But I
in the mid 2000s you get 110.
Yeah, I know.
Like in 2005,
I know.
Just before the bubble burst.
Yeah, Northern Rock. Yeah.
But also, just think what happened in America.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Yeah, I mean, what happened the world over, right?
Yeah, but. That wasn't something that ever tempted me, fortunately.
I mean, people watching this may or may not know, but in the UAE, the loan-to-value rules only came in, I think, about 2014-15. Before that, you could have whatever the bank, you know, decided that you could have in terms of your deposit. So people could put down 5% and then borrow the other 95%. But now we have loan-to-value rules, so you need to put down a minimum of 20%. 15% for a UAE national. Yeah. So the bank would make an assessment.
How secure your income was. Yeah. So if you worked for a bank, they would give you a much higher loan to value.
Yes. Yeah,
if you worked in real estate, they would give you nothing. Probably 10%. You put down 90, we'll give you 10.
Yeah. Which is understandable. I mean, the reason why they do it is you know, because real estate agents, they have fluctuating income, right? Mm. You know, if the market goes down, not only does your income go down, but the value of your property goes down. So you're
I mean, if you think about it from
risk.
A purely mercenary perspective, it's good business for a bank to foreclose on a house, depending on how much loan.
It generally costs them more.
So if you've got 50-50, and you have to foreclose on a house.
I mean, not if you got 50-50.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's how the banks here have hedged against the markets, right? Have secured their positions because...
It wasn't the banks. It was the central bank that did it.
Okay,
the banks would... Like, if you talk to most, you know, mortgage risk assessors or mortgage managers, they would prefer, you know, lower loan-to-values. They prefer to be able to assess you, check your assets, check your income, and then maybe, you know, they've still asked for 20% down, but maybe they'd be asked for 5%. Because in your second property now, you've got to put 40% down, which is massive. I mean, massive.
Also, I don't know if they... I know in the UK that they now don't assess your income from other real property assets towards your mortgage allowance.
It depends on the bank rules. I don't think it's not dictated
by the
government.
In the UK, so I recently tried to do it because Gemma and I were thinking about buying another house. And the
Who's
income,
Gemma?
My wife. I don't know why I did that. We'll not edit that out either. That's a peek behind the curtain as to how weird I am.
It's from Borat. My wife died. It's okay. I have another one.
but our income in the UK was from property that we've got there. And the banks wouldn't consider it. The banks were like, no, any income that you get from property is not deemed viable towards a mortgage repayment.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the case here or not.
Yeah, unusual. So sorry then, Mar. So then you built that, you'd got to your 20 properties or there or thereabouts, and then you decided to consolidate.
I did, yes. I decided that there were too many houses, and either I would have to have a company and employ people. I couldn't continue doing it myself. So I sold pretty much the lot, and I bought brand new builds off plan because I worked on the theory that if they were brand new, they'd be unlikely to need attention for a long, long time, and that would probably be enough for me. So
and more bedrooms, right? There were 6.
Yes, yes. So I could. I found an estate being built by some well-known builders, and all of the houses were in different styles, but I found 6. One particular style that I could turn into a 6-bedroom house, and so
you did
I bought
that
all of
less
them.
Management, right? I mean,
yes,
yeah.
They would not need refurbishing so frequently. Obviously, I could charge a lot more rent because they were super smart, beautiful kitchens, really sort of nicely done, very small gardens in a good location, and so I sold my properties. distributed some of my wealth to and others.
To the audio technicians?
The camera guys. Wow, that was kind of you.
And other children that I happened to have littered around the place. and used what was left to buy six of these, one design that I could turn into six bedrooms. And then proceeded to sell one or two of those. So now I finally sold the last one 2 months ago. There are reasons that people buy properties and build up property portfolios. One is for capital and one is for income. And I did it for income because, you know, I was not earning a great deal of money and I also needed a pension. And in the UK, that's most landlords only own one or two properties and most of them are for pensions. That is the sole reason.
Because they want the income when they retire, basically.
Exactly.
Do you think, and this is a different question, do you think, because the state pension in the UK is notoriously poor.
It is.
And people buy property to build up their pension, which, I mean, there's no secret that if you have a lot of landlords, house prices go up. That's what the UK government are trying to do at the moment. They're trying to make it more and more uncomfortable for landlords to have property so that they sell them so that more people can get on the property ladder and the house prices go down.
Is that necessarily true?
No, it's not necessarily true.
If you have more landlords, the property prices go up?
Because there's less properties in circulation.
But you still have the same amount of property. What you're saying
but
is like less buying and selling.
Yeah, it's landlords don't buy their properties.
Does less buying and selling make prices go up? I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's scarcity in the market, right? Mm. If you're a landlord and you own a four-bedroom house, you're never going to sell that. Whereas if you're an owner, you will have bought and sold a lot of properties to get up to that point, and it's churned in the market. Yeah, after 40 years.
No, it was nothing like that.
500 years?
possibly. could be that long.
Yeah. But I mean,
six properties out of circulation.
Yeah, but you could also say, like, when a family buys a house, they also don't sell it. I mean, you know, when mum moved to the UK, she bought her house in Oxford, and you haven't sold it in 35 years or however long.
That's another interesting fact, which we could do another podcast on another time.
Maybe landlords actually sell more often.
There is an obscene amount of unused bedrooms in the UK property market because houses naturally grow in size as a family grows, but then the kids fly the nest and the parents are left in a 4 or 5 bedroom house using one bedroom with 4 empty. So that's something that we could do. But there's an insane amount of unused bedrooms in the UK, whereas actually if these boomers... We're not actually not a boomer. if these people who
I'm
live...
A baby boomer.
I know, yeah. Anyway,
well, you're technically just the wrong side of
it. If people lived in smaller houses and sold those bigger properties to other incoming families, those bedrooms would be used. But yeah, there's a crazy amount of couples in big houses and not using their
bedrooms. And do you know why?
Because people don't want to sell the house that they've
No, that's part of the reason.
Memories are hard to
also sell. The government is making it more and more unlikely that people will do that because of massive stamp duty and taxation.
You don't pay CGT, capital gains tax, on your residence, so there's no reason why.
Not capital gains tax, but stamp duty you do.
You don't use stamp duty to sell. You use stamp duty to buy.
Exactly.
But then if you're buying a smaller one or two bedroom apartment, your stamp duty would be negligible. Versus
if it's other people buying your unit.
Yes.
But anyway, Mar, before you started to consolidate your properties, I mean, you must have been leveraged like pretty high. Do you know how much money you owed the bank at that point?
Ooh, good question.
Millions? If you had 20 properties and you had a mortgage on all of them.
But actually, the mortgages got smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Partly because I was paying them off, but also because eventually I stopped leveraging because if I hadn't, I could have owned hundreds of houses. It was something I was extremely good at, and I was a self-taught genius, really. Rather like you
and
two.
And self-deprecating.
See where you get your modesty from.
Yes, just like you two. Yeah. and you know, it wasn't what I wanted to do as, you know, a career move. So actually, the leveraging got less and less as I paid off more and more.
Do you know how much you owned
it? I don't.
At your peak?
I don't. No, sorry. I absolutely don't. But it was a couple of million probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, so obviously you were helped by a rising market, but...
Absolutely.
But I think what you did is something that a lot of people would like to do, you know, given, you know, people here are from all kinds of places in the world and they can't rely on pensions and there's, you know, there's no state pension from the UAE unless you're a UAE national. So what kind of advice would you give people like looking to use this method as a way to kind of, you know, fund their retirement? Start early? Leverage?
Yes, but this podcast is going out in the UAE and I really don't know
real estate's the same everywhere.
Yeah.
We're not looking for technical analysis. Just,
well, I think the first thing you have to decide is why are you buying these properties? Are you buying them for capital or are you buying them for income? And if you're buying them from income...
Which would you recommend?
Either, so depending on your needs. The only reason I could build such a big portfolio was that I was not... doing it for capital. I was doing it for income, and I used the income to buy more and more and more properties. So you have to decide. You have to have a clear sort of game plan.
But you also used the capital appreciation, right? Because you drew down and got the deposit.
But that was the leverage.
Yeah, but I mean that was the capital appreciation.
Yes, it was. But
maybe
but
you didn't buy
was,
it for that. But
no,
it was
I didn't.
Helpful.
No, exactly.
But it was the requirement to be able to build the portfolio.
Exactly.
The capital growth.
But I mean, you know, lots of people here will perhaps buy one extra house and sell it when they retire and, or, you know.
Buy an annuity with the lump sum.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever. You really do have to know what you're doing it for rather than just, you know, going into the market with no idea of why you're doing it. I knew exactly what I was doing it for. And strange to say, I was one of the few people that was actually working the system that way in Oxford because I knew all of the estate agents. And I knew exactly what I was looking for at all times. And usually on a Saturday morning, I would do the rounds and they would have a stack of properties for sale for me to look through, and I could just pick one up, glance at it and say no, and I would go through the whole lot. No, maybe, yes, 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 no, maybe. And one of them said, how do you do that? And I said, only because I have no emotional attachment to these properties. You're used to selling homes, and I'm not buying homes. I'm buying homes for other people, yes, but, you know, for my own ends. And
they meet your criteria, and your
exactly.
criteria wasn't vast, right? Small gardens, four bedrooms, near public transport, right?
Exactly, price, right? Exactly. So,
and then I think you make a good point that, in particularly in the UAE, and the quality of real estate agents that we have here is so low, because a lot of real estate agents treat their clients as like a single serve, and a lot of clients are right. If you're looking to buy a home, you're going to buy once. And then you're done.
Yes.
There are a few investors out there who buy multiple properties, you know, but a lot of them buy off plan and things like that. So if you can build a relationship with a real estate agent where you're like, listen, you know, if I get good service, I'm going to continue to invest with you.
Yes.
If you keep sending me, you know, your good value properties, you know, if you can build that relationship, you can actually get a much better, you know, better, well, you can get deals earlier, you can get them more often, and the person, like, you respects you. Whereas if you come along as a single serve, you know, a buyer, real estate agents have no loyalty to you and they'll just sell you, you know, any old rubbish.
Well, apart from my normal sort of purchases, when I decided to buy new, to sell all of the old properties and to buy new, that's when my relationship really kicked in, because I bought the first six properties off plan of a really massive estate that was being built in Oxford. And I think I I think most of the properties were about £375,000, and I bought for £320,000. The boys will have to translate that into dirhams for you, but I certainly got a big percentage off, and I was also I demanded that I rejigged the plans so that they work better for HMOs. But during the time that I was building my portfolio, houses in multiple occupation became a legal entity. They were just flat shares before that, as you have here. And the laws around operating houses in multiple occupation are now so critical and so intense and so difficult for landlords that a lot of landlords are selling now, because you can go to prison very easily for a minor misdemeanor or a minor
mistake.
And have
the license taken away from you. And if you own quite a few, that's devastating to your portfolio, right?
He's waving at me.
I'm saying 1.5 million dirham.
Oh, thank you. I can't
across,
see that.
Across six. Yeah. 250 each.
No, 1.5 each. 250,000 dirhams each, isn't that right?
No, it ain't. That's multiplied by six, right?
Well, no.
So 375 times by 6.
1.4
million
dirhams for all six of
them. Yeah. 375
times by 5. The saving is 1.5 million dirhams.
What do you, because anyway, we're coming to the end of it, what do you think about both of your boys working in real estate?
I am unsurprised, slightly more surprised by Ben than Barney, because Barney started in real estate when he was a teenager. But I'm delighted. It means that we have stuff we can talk about. Not
otherwise
much.
Christmas would be so boring.
No, it stops me from drinking all the while. No, I am absolutely delighted. They have made a good living, and are making a good living, and I did exactly the same. Arrived back in the UK from Portugal without a bean, and Escudos. Now I have lots of beans.
Enough to retire.
Enough to retire. Yeah.
Ben, are you wearing my socks? Those are my socks.
Maybe. You wanted me to return them, so here they are.
So you're going home with no socks on today. Good. I will take those off you.
Possibly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you say, from Ben's position, it was much more of a curveball. I've kind of been in this lane for forever, but, you know, Ben got an education. Why did you decide to go into real estate, Benji?
Obviously, I was a lawyer, and I was, the law that I was doing, I didn't enjoy, maybe. The law that I was doing, I didn't enjoy because I was a hedge fund lawyer, but hedge funds crashed in 2008. And then you decided to start Crompton Partners in Dubai in end of 2012. And I was looking for an out. I was looking to do something else. And so I thought, we can do something here and we can start Crompton Partners in Abu Dhabi. So I started that about 6 to 9 months later, I think. So that was
And it remains in Abu Dhabi, but not in Dubai.
Yes, now you're Eden Realty. Yeah, you now. So yeah, the Crompton name has passed on in Dubai and lives only in Abu Dhabi.
The Crompton name is still very strong, just not on a billboard anywhere.
Or a trade license, or a website, or anything.
Good point.
Yeah, so that's why I started. Inspired me, Barney, what can I say?
I knew that was the case. I just wanted to eat.
And Mum did too, of course.
Listen, guys, I think that concludes today's podcast. And I want to say a very, very special thank you to you, Mum. I know that you weren't over the moon about coming in to do this, and there was an element of cajoling. But I think, you know, it's really nice for the people that actually listen to what we have to say to find out, you know, where we've got a lion's share of our education from. So thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mum.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we love you very much.
And thank you for listening to the stuff I've been telling you all these years.
Well, it's nice to hear it again. I mean, we've heard those stories a few times because obviously, when you meet our friends and stuff, they always inevitably ask us property, real estate is always something that people are interested to talk about. And when we tell them that, you know, you had quite the empire, we've heard these stories, but it never gets old. It's always nice to hear.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've been Ben from Abu Dhabi.
I've been Barney from Dubai, and we've been to United, the two fat brokers, and Mar.
See you next time.
Can we be the three fat brokers?
You don't broker anymore. No, today, no. You can be the...
Yes.
Thank you, we've been the three fat brokers. We'll see you next time.